This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Welcome to another critical episode of the Doxcast. I am your host, Rich Early, and I'm filling in for Josh Trumbo with all the adjectivizationing that I can think of to do. That's a word, I'm pretty sure. And I'm here with the heroic Darren Gregson. How are you, Darren?
I'm good. Thank you very much, Rich.
I'm excited. We haven't done this for a while, but no. it's a comic review podcast.
Yes. And we have some awesome guests as well. I have not seen really properly for a while, so I'm happy to see Katie and Brandon again.
And the other guy. Yeah.
As I'm commonly known.
Yeah. Now, is that true?
I hope not.
No.
Well, welcome back to the Doxcast to Katie Gordon and Brandon T. Saxton, as he's known on Facebook.
Yeah.
The two members of the Jedi Council. So, hi, everybody.
Hi. Hello.
Real quick, the Doxcast is a weekly podcast that is first streamed live on Twitch and Facebook. We pull the audio from that. We post a podcast every Monday morning. And if you want to find us, you can do that on our website at paradoxcnc.com. Although, big news, we have just contracted for a new website, and we're looking at URLs and everything. So everything's on the table. So it's very exciting. You also find us on iTunes or Facebook at Paradox Comics and Cards, Twitch. We are Paradox, twitch.tv/ParadoxCNC. Twitter, ParadoxCNC. You pretty much see the theme. So tell us what the Jedi Council is and where they can find you, and then we'll get talking about our topic.
Yeah, so Jedi Council is a blog and podcast. Mainly, I guess it's got a couple of focuses. So one is taking a look at mental health through fictional characters, whether they're from comic books or movies or TV shows. And then another thing that we have started to do more recently is have other folks on the show to kind of talk about their experiences and specifically maybe some of their expertise and how it might apply to those themes or current events, or really just trying to disseminate accurate mental health or general psychology information in an accessible kind of way.
Katie, accurate information is not why I go to the internet.
Well, we're trying to shift the ratio so that there's a little more accurate stuff to inaccurate, leaning on that accurate side, so trying to do our part.
All I'm interested in is sensationalized headlines and irrational commentary on Facebook.
There's no shortage of it, so I promise we won't take that away from you.
Also, I'd like to say, I did the intro to this a little poorly. We talked about just making this a joint podcast, and I should have more clearly indicated that at the beginning. So my apologies to, maybe we're your guests on your podcast.
It all depends where you're listening to it. Whether it's through the subscription to Doxcast or through Jedi Council.
How do they find that? When do your episodes, how often do you do them, where do they find them, all that jazz?
Typically we have a new episode every Friday, though there are some times where it varies a little bit. You can find us at Jedi-Council.com. We're on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher.
Yeah. All the hot podcast locations.
Excellent. So we're here today to talk about an event comic going on from DC Comics. And one thing throughout the history of the DC Universe is when you use the word crisis, it has a certain connotation. Mm-hmm. Darren, going back to Crisis on Infinite Earths in 1985, it's something that they don't bring out very often, although over the last 10 or 12 years now, more often than
It's another way, though.
Yeah. So Infinite Crisis, Final Crisis, Identity Crisis, and now a book called Heroes in Crisis. Can you set the book up a little bit for us, the creative team, what the concept is?
Yes. So the writer is Tom King, who's currently the Batman, main Batman writer. And he's also just finished up on Mr. Miracle, a 12-issue maxi-series, which was very, very good, with Mitch Gerard. This Heroes in Crisis is a nine-issue series. For the most part, artist Clay Mann is the artist, but there might be some issues that he hands on the reins to another artist. I think Lee Weeks does quite a bit of the artwork in issue three. There might even be a Mitch Gerard issue. So yeah, that they're the main.
Only if we get lucky.
Yes, I think there. Yeah.
Well, I love Clay Mann too. But
yeah,
I,
oh, Clay Mann, yes, yep. Fantastic artist. The premise. I'm still working out what that is.
I just want to say one more thing about Clay Mann.
Okay.
So we met Tom King and Clay Mann, or I met Tom King and Clay Mann at the Chicago Comic Con in April. And Clay Mann was I felt terrible. He was like the guy nobody knew who he was sitting next to Tom King. So everybody wants to talk to Tom King, and I'm just as guilty as this as anybody. We had a comic that we got Tom King and Clay Mann to sign, but King is pretty outgoing and gregarious, and Clay Mann was just there. And for how much I respect his art now that I've seen so much of it, I feel really bad that I didn't interact with him more than I did at the time.
There could be another opportunity.
And
you can meet him. That'd be nice.
I'll apologize to him. So yes. Anyway, sorry about that.
He probably hasn't been able to think of anything else since that insult. If you're not
That's why he's not drawing the whole full series.
Yeah, they got this far in, and then he's done.
Yeah. So, we were talking about the concept of the book. I mean, the thing when it was announced, Tom King announced a book about dealing with the PTSD in superheroes, and which was sounded a really interesting a concept. It is PTSD, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And just like what's going to be known as the Sanctuary, where these heroes, after some traumatic events, which, you know, if you've been reading comics or watching movies, superhero movies, you know there's a lot that could be quite traumatic if it was, like, real. So the idea was that, you know, they were going to deal with that, which I thought was very interesting. So, yeah. That was the premise to Heroes in Crisis.
Brandon, when you've been on the show before, and Batman is your go-to favorite character, but we've talked about quite a bit of things, but I want to throw this out there with that premise in mind. I always thought to myself for years and years, here are these humans. I thought about Kyle Rayner a lot, who's the Green Lantern in the 1990s, and, I mean, still is a Green Lantern today, but... you know, he's just an artist, and he gets the power ring. He goes into space, and he does all these just incredible, ridiculous things. And then he comes back to Earth, and there's seemingly no impact on his psyche over that. And I remember thinking over the years that seemed very unrealistic. I don't know if that's something you've ever thought about or...
No, absolutely. It's it's a critical kind of thing that I have thought about, and really in a big way an impetus for some of the work that we tried to do with Jedi Council, and certainly Batman, as you know, and probably even, you know, listeners of Jedi Council, and I've certainly talked about Batman a lot even on DocsCast in the past, and just in general and in public and all the time. But with Batman, you know, we've done a number of episodes on him, and I've gave a talk at Nerd Night about Batman and a blog post, and people always kind of jump to PTSD as kind of the conclusion that they have for Batman, and oftentimes when I've kind of discussed, at least with the blog post that Katie and I co-wrote kind of about Batman and his mental health, we didn't come to that conclusion of PTSD, and specifically because PTSD diagnostically involves a certain amount of avoidance, of trying to avoid the things that kind of remind you of the traumatic event, in addition to other diagnostic criteria. And that was a piece that I just didn't see with Batman, and in a lot of ways it was kind of the opposite for him. He doesn't really avoid things that remind him of the loss of his parents, but he kind of engages them head on in a way to kind of, change that outcome that might be inevitable for other people, try to make that to be less likely. So I don't know if that kind of answers your question, at least specifically about Batman.
Well, I'm mainly just trying to set you up with questions.
Sure.
You guys are the experts. Katie, what I was thinking of, that's a really interesting educated opinion. I'm going to have a follow-up question about that. I don't want to forget it. But Katie... there are, you know, Isaac Asimov has several novels where humans are taken into space or they go to other planets, and there's one sequence in particular. I can't remember the novel because my brain is, I'm 49 and I, you know, can't remember anything. But the humans are this person is on an alien planet, and he doesn't even, like, his mind can't even grasp what he's seeing. You know, like he, things are described in a vague way that's clearly just what he's capable of interpreting. And, you know, I've always thought about in these comics when these characters go off and that is actually the type of experience that they're having, that it was never very realistic that they would come back with no consequences, which is clearly what this book is about, right? So.
Yeah, I think that I like that, and it is kind of interesting that it hasn't been addressed much or as directly as it has here. I think you get some of this in certain comics, but here it's very direct with this idea that they're heroes, but they have vulnerabilities. And what I like about the first three issues is you even see them directly talking about that, that Wonder Woman decides she's going to bite her lip because other people are suffering more, that Batman kind of pushes forward along with his mission for his own personal reasons and maybe for his team and the Bat family, but he is affected by the things that he's seen, and how could he not be? And so I think that without them directly addressing that, you could kind of come away with the idea that one of their superpowers, too, or that they're not affected by this exposure to these repeated traumatic events. And so I like Heroes in Crisis because it suggests, no, that's not true, actually. They're just kind of, a lot of them aren't dealing with it, or they're dealing with it in ways that aren't particularly healthy, but it is getting to them. So that idea for the series is really cool, and obviously really in line with our interests in terms of combining mental health and comics.
Well, Brandon, my follow-up would be, if Batman isn't, if you don't think he's suffering from PTSD particularly, there is a sequence at the end of issue number two of, or somewhere in issue number two, where Batman takes his turn in Sanctuary. Does the scene we see there, does it fit with your analysis of the character? Do you think that someone, what you know of him, would he be having the conversation and thinking about the things he's thinking about in that scene?
Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, that was the scene that kind of stood out most in my mind, probably just my own intentional bias toward Batman-related content. But yeah, I think still considering that scene where he's kind of choking up a little bit, and he's clearly looking like he's certainly distressed about the loss of former partners that he's had and seeing people die as a part of kind of his crusade, I think that still fits within kind of this framework that I at least conceptualize Batman through, wherein I don't think that he fits at least very cleanly within the kind of specific diagnostic criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder, but that doesn't mean that he's certainly not impacted by the things that he's experienced, and he doesn't experience a certain amount of distress or maybe regret about some of those things. And that's where you get into kind of two separate kind of issues. One, of course, Batman is a character with decades and decades and decades of content to kind of try to consider under a kind of diagnostic framework. And the other is kind of thinking about specific diagnostic criteria for specific mental disorders, and they are very specific. And I'm certain that probably someone looking for those specific kind of instances or diagnostic criteria could find specific content that would fit within it, if that makes sense. But it just doesn't quite fit within the framework that I have for the character, at least.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Katie, I know you have a lot of notes, and I kind of want you to just kind of rabbit hole your notes. But
I'm very fun that way. I bring notes to everything.
Tom King has really made a mark as a writer, but he's really taken on something gigantic here. I mean, my two thoughts from what you were saying earlier is, one, if the heroes of the DC Universe can face their mental health issues, do you think that that makes it easier for a reader to do that? Does that make them more identifiable? What do you think of even taking the DC characters and doing this story with them? Because that's something I've thought a lot about.
Yeah, I have a lot of hope for that, because I think that people certainly anecdotally talk about drawing inspiration in their lives from superheroes. And I think that here it's really direct, where it sends a message that you can be really strong and have a lot of different superpowers and yet still benefit from talking to someone, depending on how the story goes. But the idea that talking can and facing some of those things can help you to feel better. But even that Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman recognize that there's a need for this and recognize, basically referring people to go and to get some help. And so I do think that people who identify with these characters can take some comfort in the story of someone who's strong, is facing painful things, and is able to have a better life and, frankly, do their job better. Because I think that, and I've run into this sometimes working with people in therapy, that there's an idea that they want some change, but they're worried if they change certain things, maybe they won't do them as well, even though it's kind of that idea of a blessing and a curse. So maybe the fact that Batman is the way that he is and kind of rigid about justice in certain ways, that helps him to do his work, and that if he thinks more flexibly about things, for example, that he won't be able to do what he needs to do. But I'm hoping there's a lot of potential here to challenge that idea, that you can actually do better and be healthier and have a happier life if you're taking care of those needs simultaneously while doing that type of work.
And my thought with it, because I agree with that totally. I guess my questions are for both of you. Do you think so far after three issues, and we can talk very specifically about the characters, but I'm interested in your analysis of Tom King's work so far. If these characters, there's a framework of the book where characters have come to Sanctuary. It's a safe place that is created by Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman for people to come and find sanctuary. But they have a measure of safety and freedom to be able to open up, you know. But I'm wondering what you think of King's psychological analysis so far. Do you have a feel for that after three issues?
I haven't read a lot of Tom King's work so far, but maybe just comparing this to a little bit to his Batman run, I certainly think it's a lot different, and I think it's different in a really good way. So certainly I think the kind of, I'm hesitant maybe to call them therapy scenes, but I guess that's maybe what they are. But one-page kind of scenes where the characters are kind of taking their turn and sitting down and talking about this, I think that they're really cool, and I certainly haven't seen anything like that before. In comics at least, but in a lot of media really, and they could be out there, maybe I just haven't consumed it. So I think that's a really cool kind of style, and I think that it really allows him to really dig into the characters a bit and expose some of that vulnerability that they might be facing, that's really portraying them in a lot different way from facing off against the villain and winning and kind of saving the day, which isn't always the story, but, you know, compared to that. So I think it's really cool. The framework of the story, I know we were talking a little bit before we went on the air, how it's definitely a little different, too, trying to even just figure out what exactly has happened. So not only do I think it's depicted in a really cool way, where it's kind of showing these therapy scenes and digging into the characters in a really meaningful way, but I actually think it's a really engaging story, and I'm really curious to keep learning more about what happened.
Yeah, we were saying we were just getting pieces of a narrative so far that maybe as a whole, when it's in a graphic novel form, will be a different read than it is piece by piece. So my last thought, and then I'm going to let Katie kind of take over with all her bajillion notes, but is it's not just
a lecture.
Yeah, nice. If this was happening in the Marvel universe, that I think would be, most people would go, oh, you know, that makes sense. Marvel always sort of digs into more of the real world philosophy of things. The fact that it's being done with the DC characters, that's the part that I'm having the most trouble with. Not from the concept. I think the concept is fantastic, but that they're actually taking very well known iconic characters, even some of their tier two characters. Booster Gold, if you're a comic fan, is really well known, and they're doing some strong stuff with Booster Gold, you know, or Wally West, or all these characters, not even to mention the big three that we've talked about as well, but Harley Quinn. I mean, it's not weird for Harley Quinn to have psychological trouble, I guess, you know, but Poison Ivy and so on, and they're throwing them in the mental health. I don't want to say meat grinder, but that's the word that came to mind. You know, it's just. That's what's, I think, most jarring about this book so far, is the fact that it's the DC characters. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, even as you were talking about getting just slices of the things they're going through so far, you have to know those characters pretty well, I think, for it to be as powerful. Like, part of the reason that it's so powerful to see Batman and Wonder Woman saying these things is you have this image of them as, especially Wonder Woman, as, I mean, she has vulnerabilities for sure, but she's kind of overall just looks like the epitome of resilience. And so for her to talk about this childhood story where she was in a lot of pain and her, she couldn't go to her mom to soothe her, I think that that's a big deal to have a major character like that. So it is hard to get used to that because even though I've read a fair amount of Wonder Woman, this is very different than the other stuff that I've seen.
And from a writing perspective, forgive me, but it felt like I was reading a real story from a real woman. I mean, I really felt, do you know what I mean? Like, it was a unique story. I don't think a male character could tell that same story, you know? Like, I just thought it really, that was a really powerful scene.
Yeah.
All right, you guys have done a great job answering all my questions.
Thank you.
But we've primarily brought you on because we want you to talk about the book. So I don't know how you want to go about it exactly, but we just really want to hear the Jedi Council take, you know, on Heroes in Crisis, so.
Okay, well, I will enlarge in my notes, Brandon, in case you want to talk about any of these things. But I, before launching into my lengthy notes, is there anything that you particularly wanted to talk about or bring up?
You know, I not specifically, no. I guess the real thing that I have really enjoyed so far and will continue to enjoy as it keeps going is the specific kind of therapy scenes. I think that's actually a really cool, I guess, I don't know if it's right to call it a feature, but a really cool aspect of the series so far. And like I said, what I really like about it is it just gives Tom King a chance to really display these characters or maybe explore aspects of these characters that haven't really been dug into before. So I think to the extent that those continue, I think that's just a really cool part of the comic. I know that's that maybe there's not a lot of content in me just saying that's cool, but
no, I think it's really cool. And one of the things that I liked is that in the second issue, Batman specifically says Sanctuary is anonymous. This allows heroes to talk about their pain and shame. All information gathered by Sanctuary is immediately deleted. Mm-hmm. Who comes, what they say, when they leave, nothing is reported. It's suggested that this may not be true, but the idea is the concept there that for it to truly be safe, it has to be completely anonymous. And it reminded me that does parallel how therapy is mm-hmm. done with confidentiality, where it has to, I mean, that's a major part of our ethical mm-hmm. code, is that when you're doing therapy, you have to keep the information confidential. Otherwise, why would people feel comfortable mm-hmm. opening up about those things? There are exceptions to confidentiality, mm-hmm. for example, if there's harm, if the person might harm themselves or other people, but that idea there, I think, is important. And the fact that it would be immediately deleted, I think, allows them to talk. And so I liked that part. It certainly, that seems like those conditions would have to be there for these people to open up.
Yeah, that scene actually specifically stood out in my mind, too, because I really liked that interaction between the characters in that scene where they're saying, you know, all right, Batman, like, let's go ahead, do your thing. Let's kind of figure out who did this. And he's like, no, we just don't have the data. Like, come on, like, you've got kryptonite in the belt. You once planned how to take us all down. Like, okay, we get it. And he's like, no, seriously, it's not there. And so I thought that was a really cool interaction. Just because, I mean, even, like, the people around him were a little, like, incredulous that he didn't actually somehow have some underlying, you know, system or feature in place to kind of, you know, a safeguard of some kind, like yeah. you would expect that he always does. So I thought that was a really cool scene.
Yeah. Should I just go through?
Okay. Yep.
But chime in, please, anyone.
Yep.
So something really interesting in the first issue is Harley Quinn starts talking about her experiences with the Joker, and she actually quotes one of the more famous figures in mental health, Sigmund Freud, and she says, "No one who, like me, conjures up the most evil of those half-tamed demons that inhabit the human beast and seeks to wrestle with them can expect to come through the struggle unscathed." And I assume she's a lot of it is talking about how she went from being a mental health professional herself and then getting involved with the Joker and the things that have happened since then. So one of the psychological concepts that stood out to me there is that, as we just talked about, they're there to deal with various traumatic and other stressful things they've been exposed to. And here it's kind of turned in the other direction, which is I'm going to become kind of wrestling with my demons, or dealing with those comes with its own kind of battle wounds, or the people might come out, or she says, a bit scathed. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, and I don't know, maybe we could talk a little bit about that, gets at a point of what therapy actually is.
Mm-hmm. Well, does she feel a little more at home here than the other characters do to you?
Yeah, because of her, because of her having been in hospitals and stuff like that. Yeah, she seems to have more of, it's not, like you were saying, it's not surprising to hear her struggling with psychological issues and talking about it, and even being familiar with Freud, given her degree and also her experience as a client of therapy. Yeah,
I think it's another nuance to the writing of the book, where I read a lot of comics, and I read a lot of comics where there are word balloons that come out of faces, and but the words could be attributed to any character in the books. But I feel like there are a lot of little scenes in this book that are, you know, only attributable to the character that's in the scene. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and I think that kind of goes back to kind of what I thought or think is one of the really neat underlying features of it, is just digging into these characters in a really meaningful way that, like you kind of pointed out, Rich, I think that maybe traditionally hasn't been done to the same degree in DC as maybe it has been in Marvel, kind of more of the micro level kind of themes, maybe. Yeah.
So one of the things I think that can be kind of a misconception of therapy that I've heard people talk about is the idea that you go in and someone comforts you, that is often part of it, and they're kind of hand-holding you and telling you everything's okay, but in a way that's not particularly helpful, like they're coddling you or something like that. And therapy, at least the way that we've been trained on it, isn't like that. So I don't know if you want to say
more. I'd love to hear your analysis of that. That makes me think of my best therapist in my life said to me, you know, you're here with a, you know, if you're here, it's because we have a plan. And as soon as we don't have a plan, either you're, you know, if you're not working on that plan, then I don't know why you're here. And if we've accomplished that plan, I don't know why you're here, you know. So
yeah, that sounds like a good therapist.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, maybe on the outset, just saying there are a lot of different therapists with different styles.
But absolutely.
Yeah, certainly the well, one of the people who trained me to be a therapist, of course, is in the room, so maybe unsurprisingly to her, perhaps, the style of therapy that I, you know, try to give or engage in is really action-oriented, and of course there's going to be that that support and that positive regard for the person that I'm working with and that very genuine therapeutic kind of relationship. But I want to make sure that you know, we're recognizing that when I'm meeting with someone for therapy, it's just an hour a week, and there are several other hours in the week as well. And if we only try to make change during that 1 hour, that might not be very effective. So to the extent that we're really being intentional in how we spend the time that we have together and trying to generalize and develop skills that can be practiced outside of the time that we have together is certainly the approach that I have. So I think to the extent that we can challenge kind of the idea that therapy is just going in and venting for an hour every week, and it's maybe reframing it more, that it's a very intentional, skill-building, kind of action-oriented kind of process with measurable goals and outcomes, I think that's a really great thing.
Katie, what are your thoughts on this? You brought it up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Brianna.
Thankfully.
For reasons.
Yeah.
Pass that test. No, I mean, that's the whole idea. So I want to be clear, and as Brianna was saying, like, part of it is the therapist making sure the person is comfortable and assessing their readiness to cope with these things. But it is my belief that for most therapy, it depends on it, so I'm trying not to make too general of it, but in general, the idea is face rather than avoid when the person's ready, and sometimes that means teaching how to cope or building up their support network and not diving into the traumatic things. You got to be able to make sure that they've got some things in place to deal with some of the scathing that might happen with that. And a good therapist will try their best to do that and work collaboratively with the client to figure out what they're ready for. And so I'm excited about that idea of Wonder Woman, like I said, just in all of them kind of keeping these things in and then creating a sanctuary that's a safe kind of area for them to talk about their feelings and deal with these things. And I like that because it really mirrors how therapy sets up certain elements. You know, it's not like if it was easy as just thinking about the bad thing that happened, then you wouldn't need a therapist, right?
For the purposes of Heroes in Crisis, mm-hmm. a safe spot is a place not in the war zone, so to speak.
Right.
Where they're out of the environment where they would be endangered because they would be attacked by someone or they would be mm-hmm. defending the city against someone. That's the safety here. But you're basically saying that's sort of a metaphor for what is happening when you first come to the therapist's office
Yeah. Yep. It's anonymous. It's led by them. What do they want to talk about? They have that option, so they're very much in control mm-hmm. of the things they're talking about. No one's forcing them to talk about certain things. And so, yeah, those are the types of things.
There does seem to be, and I don't know what the purpose of this is, but in the book, you know, every time we meet a character or see a character, and sometimes it's a page and sometimes it's a panel in the structure we're talking about, they always say their name. You know, it seems like everyone mm-hmm. is like, I'm so-and-so, and then says something short about themselves. We only have three issues, so I assume mm-hmm. more is going to unfold, but I'm curious why that. You know, like, why do they always say their name at the beginning, you know, when we first see them?
I'm only speculating, but mm-hmm. my guess is that it maybe is somewhat rooted in the kind of popular culture depiction of a therapy group where you start by saying your name and then go around the group. That was kind of what I thought maybe was a piece of that. I don't know if you have any different thoughts, but
we never. Well, no, I don't. I was curious if there was a methodology or something behind it. But like, we don't know who they're talking to
right.
ever. We or unless I'm just a really bad reader. You know, that's one of the pieces that mm-hmm. we're missing here is who are they telling these stories to exactly.
No, it's a good question, and certainly one of the pieces. I think if I'm not wrong, they're all sitting in the same spot, because mm-hmm. I think there's an emblem that's behind each of them. So that that made me wonder or think, because I was wondering that too, if they were in a circle, but I didn't think that they were because of that, but I might be misremembering.
Well, it's being recorded also.
Right.
We know that as
yes.
well, and so to some degree, I was wondering if they're talking to a camera.
Right.
But then if they're only talking to a camera, then would there be a form of therapy that wouldn't have a therapist on the other side, where you would just sit down and you do the talking? I mean,
I don't know very much about this. I do know there are things like apps that people sometimes use and that researchers have tried to develop, things like kind of self-manualized types of treatments. I don't think, at least any that I'm familiar with, involve that kind of style like we're seeing in the comic. And I don't know very much about the research kind of about that, those modalities that aren't driven kind of lack that component that I was talking about earlier that involves that kind of very genuine therapeutic relationship. I don't know. It's a good question.
For now, it's part of the mystery of the book.
Yes.
All right, Katie, you're killing it. What else you got there?
I wanted to bring up, this is maybe a little bit of a minor thing, but with Hotspot, he's talking about having a catchphrase, and it's, I'm just warming up. And then he says, we're all trying to be something. It helps, right, knowing you got something to say, right? Even if you go out, at least they'll remember you. And I just think that taps into a kind of basic human need that to be recognized or to have some purpose or have some meaning. And so his way of establishing that is coming up with a catchphrase that people will remember regardless of what happens after he says that. And I just thought that was very relatable, that most people want to leave some kind of legacy or have some purpose in their life and be remembered. So I like that as a psychological concept in that issue.
Yeah, what are the other little moments from the characters that stood out?
I like that Arsenal said, I'm Arsenal and I'm a superhero and an addict. So two things, because I think that a lot of the time, especially people struggling with substance use disorders or other types of addictive issues, sometimes there can be this tendency to have dichotomous thinking about it, that they're just an addict or they're just someone who uses substances. And here he's very powerfully drawing the contrast of being a superhero and also, as he calls himself, an addict. And so I think that pushes against the, I guess I would say, oversimplistic views of people who are struggling with addiction, and instead says, you know, it's kind of like it's not just who you think or whatever your stereotype about it is. Instead, you can be multifaceted, and being a superhero doesn't protect you from also struggling with addiction. So I like that too.
How about you, Brandon? Any little character moments like that?
Yeah, I think that this one was maybe already referenced, but I wanted to circle back to it, was Wonder Woman, when she references that, you know, other people maybe had it worse than she did, so she was just going to kind of bite her tongue and keep it to herself. Cause,
hey, is she a Midwesterner?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Most likely. I think that there are a few things to maybe unpack from that. That's a sentiment that I've heard before, is, you know, other people have it worse, therapy isn't for me. So I think, in a nutshell, the theme of the whole series so far, or one of the many themes, is that everyone can ask for help, and things don't have to be so bad before you ask for help. It's okay to just recognize that you have that need, even if other people have it worse per your perspective. That doesn't mean that you couldn't benefit from seeking those services or seeking that support. And it also reminded me a little bit of sometimes the guilt that people sometimes have when they're reaching out for help. I'm thinking sometimes of specifically of people who I've worked with who have had depression, and they have this very low mood and these symptoms that are causing them distress and impairing their functioning and their ability to accomplish the things that they want to do. But they feel guilt because they feel bad, and they say, you know, I shouldn't feel this way. My life is fine. And then that really just turns into a really negative cycle where you already feel bad, and then when you compound that by feeling guilty about feeling bad, that's just a really, really dangerous cycle for people to get caught up in. That's very negative and very predictive of poorer outcomes. So I would just encourage people who maybe have that mindset that, you know, other people have it worse, I don't need to reach out for help. Just because you think someone else maybe has it worse doesn't mean that you don't need help too, or that you couldn't benefit from help as well.
Darren, do you have any exciting questions?
I don't. I'm just captivated by what Katie.
I just wanted to make sure. No. I knew you would be polite. And
yeah, no.
You wouldn't want, so I just wanted to
this
make sure.
This is great. So. No.
Katie, more notes?
Well, I do have more notes, but if I can just add to, I agree with what Brandon said, and I also, one of the things that's really interesting about that is that Wonder Woman's known for her compassion. I mean, they even specifically say that Sanctuary is built with Wonder Woman's compassion, and here she's not showing compassion for herself at all, and you can kind of find things out of balance in a variety of ways. Sometimes people only have compassion for themselves and very little for other people. Often it's the reverse way. But in a balanced way, you can say, you know, maybe I haven't been through the worst things in the world, but still I can feel bad that when I was a little girl and I had nightmares, I couldn't seek out comfort from my mom, which is a very reasonable thing to expect. And so I like that. I don't know where that's going to go, but I think that's kind of a surprising, another juxtaposition, I think, from how you usually think about Wonder Woman. But very true. I mean, there are people like that, right? They have a lot of empathy for other people, and then it's harder for them to have that towards themselves, and the reverse, too.
But. We should come back when this is all said and done and see where it wraps up.
I'd love to.
Booster Gold.
Yeah.
The other is, I mean, the story seems to be, there are a lot of characters in the story, but it seems to me that Harley Quinn and Booster Gold are the two forces that the story is revolving around. The action, you know, we certainly have the big three, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, who have set it up and coming to investigate, but it seems like these two are at the heart of our mystery. And so one thing we didn't talk about is at the very beginning of the story, there's been apparently a mass shooting at the place. And these people, as we've talked about, all the safety that was provided and all that, and it seems to have not been enough for whatever reason. And you guys may be maybe you have some thoughts on this, or maybe your trained psychological minds will have found clues that the rest of us didn't so far. But and so we have a lot of characters dead at the beginning of the story. I mean, that's 3 months ago. Pardon me for spoilers at this point. The mystery then is who killed them, and you alluded to Batman not really knowing, right? Mm-hmm. But reading the story, it seems to be coming down to, and I mean, this is going to be a spoilery part of the talk, I guess. So my apologies if you haven't read the book. This is the time to stop listening apparently right now. But it seems to be either that it's Harley Quinn or Booster Gold. Mm-hmm. At least that's the read so far. Or that Harley certainly seems to know what's happened, mm-hmm. and Booster seems more crazy. Like, he doesn't necessarily know. Does that make sense between the two of them? But, and I'm just curious about Booster Gold and what you guys think so far.
So. Yeah, I mean, that was my next note.
Sure.
So one of the things that I don't know what's going on there either, right? It seems like Harley Quinn is doing the killing, at least so Booster Gold thinks, but then he wonders if it's him, like you said. And so I'm wondering, and also, to be honest with you, kind of hoping it doesn't go in the direction of dissociative identity disorder, or sometimes called multiple personality disorder, that Booster Gold, you know, has these different personalities, and that's why he was unaware that he was doing it. And the reason I hope it doesn't go in that direction is just because it's been done so many times that I'm hoping it's something a little different than that. And also, it's usually done, the other part about it, Brandon and I think most recently talked about this in detail when we're talking about the movie Split, is that it also tends to be used as a way to explain people who are being violent. And that's just a terrible misconception about people who have mental health problems. I mean, they're much more likely to be victimized than to be perpetrators of violence. Mm. So I wondered if it was in that direction. I don't know if you were thinking that too, Brandon.
Yep, actually I was. And also I had all the same thoughts, probably unsurprisingly, having processed through Split as well. And really hoping that it's not kind of a repeat of that same old kind of song and dance. Especially, it's just, in my experience, a problematic depiction of dissociative identity disorder that people seem to consume in a very factual way. I very specifically remember, and spoilers for Split, and that movie came out a long time ago, so I feel very comfortable.
I spoiled the comic we're talking about. Okay.
So, folks who aren't familiar maybe with Split, my 5-second review is it's a man with dissociative identity disorder, and one of his personalities is quite literally a monster. And he experiences very genuine physiological changes when he changes between these personalities. And a student very genuinely asked me, you know, one of those personalities was diabetic and had to take insulin. Boy, how common is that? And understandably that she would think that. But so that's where I get a little bit, I would caution people, I guess, about the way that they depict certain disorders because of the way that it can be consumed as fact.
Yeah, it's misconceptions and also redundancy. Like, I don't know if anyone's seen that movie Adaptation that came out a while ago, mm-hmm. but they kind of poke fun at this idea because his brother is writing that movie, The Three, and
yep.
and he just talks about how overused this is. And to be clear, the disorder is something that should be studied and represented with compassion. I understand why it's so interesting to people, but I think I'm hopeful that there's something unexpected here.
So, to circle back to your original question about Booster Gold, I don't have a lot of thoughts yet, but certainly a lot of curiosity.
Do either of you have much background with Booster to refer to coming into this story?
I have none.
Okay, that was just something I was wondering about. So,
yeah, mine is pretty limited too.
He for the most part, has just been a fun minor character. He's exactly what he describes. He acquires this, he's got all this knowledge of the past because he's from the 24th century. He was a high school football player. He blew out his knee so he couldn't become a pro football player. And he steals the suit and goes back in time to try to make a name for himself as a hero, you know. And so it reminds me of Hotspot when you were talking about him wanting to be something. But he was always sort of like endearingly charming and slightly buffoonic, you know. He had his ego and he wanted to do these things sort of for selfish reasons, but he still chose to do heroic things, right? So he was doing good. And that's who he's always been. Over the years, over the last 10 years, they've taken him and they sort of turned him into a time traveler. And I wonder if that isn't what this is about a little bit. It's something I was thinking at the beginning of the story. He during the New 52, was aware of the previous universe to get into like comic continuity at all, right? And so I just get this impression that we're supposed to think that time travel has snapped his brain or something in this story, and I don't quite understand it. It's a total break from anything we've seen from the character so far, and actually bothers me quite a bit. So I'm interested. I'm really interested to hear about your interpretations of that, you know, that you've said as well. So I don't know. That's Booster.
That's good to know. I think that the other thing that kind of rings true in people struggling with issues is he's wondering if he killed people or not, and he's struggling with that. That particular manifestation isn't that common, fortunately. But the idea of, is what I think happened real, is something that's pretty common for people to wonder about. And sometimes it's literally if they're suffering from schizophrenia or something, and just having a hard time being told that something that they're actually seeing or hearing but other people are saying isn't there. Trying to understand how to be okay with yourself and understand that you're seeing things that aren't real, and trying to come to terms with that. And then there are other people who maybe have anxiety and they're worrying about something a ton, and they'll say things like, you know, I feel like I'm crazy because I just can't stop thinking about this thing, even though rationally I know it's not a big deal. And so that part is interesting, and his struggling with what to do and then thinking, well, what would Batman do? Do I turn myself in or not? Because I don't know if I really did it. So
that's what I think. I get the impression that, like, Harley knows what happened and he doesn't, or that he does. Maybe he witnessed whatever happened, but could it be that he witnessed what happened and it drove him sort of mad? Is that possible?
Yes, I mean,
or is that more of a stretch for what we're seeing from his behavior?
I mean, it's tough to say. Definitely, if he saw that kind of mass killing, that could definitely very negatively affect him, maybe especially if he's already vulnerable because he's got all this time-traveling stuff going on and has a hard time maybe piecing a clear picture together. It's not real common for people to completely not know if it was them who did it. That's pretty unusual and pretty rare. Can happen in extreme times of stress, but yeah, those are my thoughts anyway.
So schizophrenia or multiple personality seems to be the most likely to you.
Maybe. Like I said, I'm hoping it goes in a different direction. And then there are people who don't have dissociative identity disorder, or sometimes called multiple personality disorder, but they can have periods of dissociation where basically they're not, they feel detached from reality, and everybody experiences this to some extent. When we watch a movie or we're daydreaming, we're not completely conscious of things that are going on, but to the extreme level where you kind of black out and do something and don't remember and there are no substances involved, that's rarer, but it does happen sometimes. And so it's possible that that happened, especially during extreme times of distress. When it does happen, that can be kind of the setting in which it happens.
So we really want to see how the story plays out, to see how
on
top of his psychological game Tom King is. We're almost out of time.
Okay.
I can't thank you guys enough for the analysis and the thought. So, I mean, I guess I'd say if you've got a core comment, you know, what bottom line comment, it's probably time for those.
Sure, I have two. The first one is, and I already said it, so I'm repeating myself, but One of the themes of the story is really that it's okay for everyone, regardless of your perceptions of the experiences of others, to take a step back and say, maybe things could be going a little bit better for me right now, and reach out to get the support that you might need to get to a place where you might be more comfortable. And the other one is, specifically for Tom King, assuming he's listening, is if he needs, you know, any advice or bounce some ideas around about the psychology of these characters, just give me a tweet.
I've spoken to him on Twitter.
Perfect.
You have? That's amazing.
Well, yeah, man, I mean, he remembered me because we had copies of issue 24 of Batman is the proposal issue. And so I brought copies to get signed to me and Jen because we had just recently gotten engaged and whatnot. So that was really cool. And you remember that. And I told him I was a retailer. And I got really good at introducing myself as America's only blind comic book retailer. And then he's, you know, and one of the things he said to me was, well, how can I help you sell more comics? And it caught me off guard. I didn't even answer. You know, Tom King is asking me how to help me sell more comics. So anyway, Katie, how about you? A final bottom line-ish thought.
Not good at synthesizing long things into brief statements.
Nope, I want one. Tough.
Okay, I'll come up with one real quick. I mean, I just think that, to me, one of the themes is that people have their own struggles going on, and that avoiding thinking about them or dealing with them has negative effects. In the short term, it might feel better to not think about those negative things. Like, you can keep going on and going about your life. But usually, if there's something that you've experienced, especially like them, I mean, they've experienced these very stressful events, that if you neglect those things, they can take a toll on your health. And so it can be helpful to face them, but a big part that's helpful is having someone to help you through that process so that you're not just kind of on your own and facing it. And that can give you the confidence and tools that you need to cope with it.
Okay, so here are my last couple questions or thoughts. And again, this is the joint podcast with the Paradox Comics and Cards DoxCast and with the Jedi Council podcast. You can find the DoxCast every Monday morning on iTunes or on our website, currently ParadoxCNC.com, hopefully something new soon. And you can find the Jedi Council every Friday on everything, Spotify, iTunes, and more. And we can make sure we plug all the information once again. But my final couple of questions are, one, not everybody's going to have the same outcome because it's up to the patients to make the journey. And so I'm kind of interested in that, you know, of I don't know if we have much indication of which of the characters are going to make their therapy journey, but that was something I wanted to ask you, is if you had spotted anybody you thought was had a better chance to do well in therapy than others so far from what we've got. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Superman stood out to me because, I mean, he is Superman, so he's got some definite kind of...
He had kind of a made-up issue. He's like, yeah, maybe I've got an issue to make everybody else feel good, too. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's part of why, but I think he just had a lot of insight and openness about his struggle, which is balancing these different identities as being human and as being a superhero, being Clark Kent and being Superman, and figuring out, like, which one am I really, and am I making one more this way or the other. And I guess part of actually what you're saying, so I think part of it is because it seems like a very addressable issue so far, as compared to Batman, who's like, these people that were like sons to me died, and it's partially my fault for training them and bringing into that. So I think you're right. That is probably part of it. So he's kind of got the insight, and he's also got something that's pretty manageable to process and work through.
Yeah, I guess I would mirror the same thing, and I don't think there are a lot of other hints as to who might be most or least successful in their course of treatment yet. But certainly, you know, outside of comic thing is that, you know, therapy is work, and it's not easy work. It's definitely hard work. So I guess maybe whoever is willing to kind of put in that effort to challenge those things that are obviously very, very meaningful and traumatic kind of events, I guess might predict better outcomes.
The other thing I think is there are a lot of movies that deal with psychological issues, so I don't know why Heroes of Crisis sort of strikes me in a different way. I think, again, it's because it's the DC characters, and because tackling them this way is just so different than what you would expect. But how much responsibility does a writer, or if you were going to write a psychological story, you know, you were going to sit down, you had, you know, Brandon or Katie, you had a movie idea or whatever, you know, does Tom King have a lot of responsibility to try to do it? I don't want to say right. I hate the word right. You know, but like in a responsible way. Does that make sense? For the story to matter, for one, or just in general? You know, what does that? Do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that we think about that a lot, and certainly in past episodes that we've done, we've commented on that and qualified things quite often and said, you know, the people who made this made it to be entertaining, and they didn't make it to be educational. Although this is kind of our perspective, or these are maybe the areas that were more accurate or less accurate, we kind of recognize that. But I do think that I say that with maybe a grain of salt, where if, as a content creator, someone approaches you maybe and kind of gives you this information or evidence that maybe the work that you're putting out has the potential to be harmful to people's mental health by depicting mental health in a way that might lead to further stigmatization, then I think that's where I tend to maybe be a little bit less, understanding of people who are just trying to entertain or create content.
Good answer, I think.
I think
smarter
that,
than I know.
I hope.
Katie?
Yeah, Brandon and I are on the same page about this. I think because a lot of people, we can say people shouldn't get their information about mental health from a comic book, but people get mental health information from the stuff that they consume, and usually they're not, unless they're in the field, particularly reading research articles or know how to discern from what's been written more accurately and less accurately. I would have a hard time with any field that isn't mine trying to figure out what's kind of the higher quality or lower quality or accurate stuff. And so, yeah, this definitely comes out when teaching classes about mental health, but just in conversations that people have ideas about what it means to struggle with mental health problems and it being synonymous with evil or being a villain, and that's really harmful to people who are already struggling with mental health problems. It can prevent people from seeking care. It can make people keep their distance because they're worried that someone's dangerous when there's not that much risk of danger. And so, yeah, I mean, artists can have the freedom to do what they want, but I really like when they take the time and effort to also do it responsibly.
All right. Well, thank you very much for doing this, and by double dipping, we each get a free episode to post. I guess if you're watching us on Facebook or Twitch tonight, we're going to do two more episodes. We're going to do our 2018 year in review episode, which I know will turn into two parts, because we'll talk too much. So that's coming up next. But I mean, thanks very much, Brandon and Katie, and listeners, we will see you on the next DoxCast and the next Jedi Council.
This was a DoxCast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, geek on.